Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is James Jackson. One guest on this episode, if you're an NBA fan, very familiar person between his coaching, obviously, and has now gotten great acclaim for his broadcast work. Stan Van Gundy will be in Toronto this week to do the Sparks at Tempo for Prime Video. Of course, if you're an NBA fan, you have heard him on Prime Video during their NBA coverage, his work with Michael Grady and Ian Eagle. We will get into all of this. And Stan, I believe, at least, you know, you can't see him right now, but the background is beautiful and sunny. So he's somewhere very, very warm. And I bring him in. Welcome, Stan Van Gundy.
Great to be with you, Richard. Yeah, I'm in Florida at my house, and it's a little too warm right now, but that's what we get in the summer here. So,
all right, so let's start here. You know, you're obviously, you know, you're a basketball lifer. Jeff has been on this podcast a number of times. Obviously, I know your family's history going back to upstate New York with your dad was a coach. So, you know, like I have no doubt that you are someone who, if there's a WNBA game on, would be watching just because you're a basketball holic. But I think if I remember from your public relations department, they said this is the first, I know it's the first game you're calling for Amazon that's a WNBA game. I don't know if this is the first WNBA game you've ever done as an analyst. So let's start there. What is your background with the league? And is this indeed your first game doing this?
It is my first game doing it. And wow. I basically begged to get a game, Richard. I mean, because I had my contracts, the NBA, and then they hire their people for the WNBA. But from the minute I found out they had the WNBA, I was going to my boss, Amina Hussein, and saying, come on, you got to give me a WNBA game along the way. One of my daughters lives in New York. She and her husband are Liberty season ticket holders.
Nice.
Sandy Brondello was playing for the Miami Soul when I was an assistant in Miami. So, you know, I go back. That's where I started watching the WNBA in person was then. And then my youngest daughter and I took a trip down and watched a couple of days of the Unrivaled this year down in Miami. And, you know, up close and watching that, you can be so close there watching the players. You really got to, I got a better view of their personalities, their attitudes, their demeanor. And so even more sold on it. And I'm really excited to get a chance to do a game. I've probably put more preparation in on this than I have on anything else because I want to be good on it.
All right, so let's get into it, and I should be very, very specific here. That game is Thursday, June 25th, 7 p.m. start, Tempo and the Sparks. Actually, the day after we're taping this, you'll hear this on Tuesday, the Sparks had an amazing win in last second when Neko Gumake hit a three-pointer on what was a very, very momentous day for the WNBA, 30th anniversary game. Lisa Leslie was there. Rebecca Lobo was there. So that was very cool. All right, Stan, you mentioned preparation. So is your preparation, I think people will be interested to listen to this podcast, is your preparation the same in terms of do you do like film work on the teams? You obviously will talk to the coaches in some kind of production meeting. Is it the same for the WNBA in terms of your approach to prep a game?
Yeah, absolutely. I've probably had to watch more because I'm not, I mean, just being honest, I'm not as intimately familiar with the players. And so where normally I'll watch about three games on each team getting ready for the games, in addition to just casual viewing that I do every night on this, I'll probably end up watching about five games of each team. They played each other twice in May, watched the two of those, and then recent games with both teams. So, yeah, it even a little bit more time watching film.
Okay. Do you like, having talked to a lot of people, usually with the NBA, you will meet with the coaches prior to the game for like 15, 20 minutes, something to that effect, 10 minutes. Is that generally your experience too?
Yeah, about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game, we'll, depending on when the coaches want to do it, we'll meet with each coach and just get their ideas on a couple of, things going on around the team. Usually in our preparation, we'll have some things that we're interested in getting their viewpoint on. You know, and I'll have things from games I watched, you know, I'll say, hey, I noticed you went zone or you went to this matchup or this pick and roll scheme. You know, what did you think? Is it something you'll go back to? Things like that. Obviously, in the NBA, Richard, I know most of the coaches pretty well. In the WNBA, like, I don't know Lynn Roberts or Sandy Brondello, though I've been a big Sandy Brondello fan for a long time. You know, my daughter's a season ticket holder of the Liberty in New York, was absolutely pissed off when Sandy got let go there. And so I've watched that team a lot.
Yeah.
And when she was there, and she's outstanding, but I've never met either one of them.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah, actually, I've covered a lot of that team this year here in Toronto. And she is a great, great, she's a, you know, like in my world, you'd say she's a very media friendly coach. She's just a very good, engaging person to deal with. So I think you will enjoy that. Do you know, the reason I asked you that question is, do you presume it's the same? Maybe you actually have your production schedule. Like, will you get the two coaches an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game? So if nothing else, you'll be able to run a couple things by them. So when you're in the middle of your call, you'll have a better sense for viewers.
Absolutely. I don't know exactly if we'll be on the exact same schedule as we are in the NBA in terms of timing, but we will get a chance to talk to them. The main thing I want out of that, I'm going to be a fanboy, Richard, but I'm getting a picture with Sandy Brondello, and because then I can send it to my daughter and say, hey, here's your two favorite coaches.
That's very funny. Yeah, no, we in Toronto are very lucky that the Liberty decided to sort of use the NBA model, where, right, if you don't win a title that year, we're running the coach out of town, which seemed preposterous to me, even though I think their current coach, DeMarco, is good. And I think they'll obviously be a very, you know, legit contender. But that Toronto got very lucky. You don't get expansion teams don't get the opportunity to hire a coach like that almost ever.
I agree. I think that, you know, as soon as it happened, I could not believe it. I said, how does an expansion team get the most accomplished coach in the league?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they got. Championship with two different teams. In the finals another year, an Olympic medalist coach. I mean, you know, how do you get that with an expansion franchise? You know, an incredible get for the Tempo.
So for me, I want to ask you a couple questions about the WNBA, sort of more broader questions, Stan. From, you know, anybody who has covered the sport, you could sort of see this train coming for a while. The athleticism was getting better. The skill level was getting much higher. College basketball, there were those viewership numbers on ESPN continue to increase. And then Caitlin Clark came around and just, you know, was a comet and had that NCAA tournament where, you know, 18, 17 million people like watched that final and sort of things exploded. From your perspective, was this just the natural growth you think of the WNBA and that they're in year 30 the way the NBA is in year whatever it is, 60 plus? Or from your perspective, has it been something else that has caused such a mass interest in this league over the last 5-7 years?
Well, I think a lot of it was the normal evolution, but we can't minimize Caitlin Clark. I mean, you just can't. And I know that's created a little controversy with some WNBA players, but you just can't minimize it. When she came on the scene in Iowa and then got drafted in the WNBA, I mean, the number of fans that were interested in it, and not just casually interested, but
yeah,
really
invested,
interested in,
yeah.
It went way up. And then what happened is because Caitlin Clark brought in a lot of people, but then people started watching and said, well, it's not just Caitlin Clark by a long shot. Like, there's a lot of great players and the game is good. And the players in that league have worked extremely hard for the entire 30 years to build relationships with the fans and everything else. I mean, I love the NBA, but the WNBA experience for the fans is totally different. Like, those players are accessible. I think they really, really appreciate the fans and go out of their way to, you know, communicate with them, relate to them. It's really, the WNBA is a different fan experience and one of the best in sports, period.
I agree. I don't know if you feel this way. One of the things, when I was at Sports Illustrated, one of the reasons I really liked covering women's basketball in the women's Final Four was I just got so much more access to the people I was covering, and I felt like I could tell their story or at least connect with them in a different way, where my colleagues who were even covering the men's Final Four, you know, they were one of 80 people in a big locker room or press conference, and you couldn't, maybe you'd get 5 minutes with the coach because it was Sports Illustrated, but you couldn't really connect. And so I bring all this up to ask you, like, is there something to you wanting to do this WNBA game? Because the NBA is I don't want to call it ultra professional, but you know what I'm saying, Stan? It's such a larger scaled thing that I wonder, like, for you going to do the Tempo and Sparks, like, you'll really connect, like, with whoever you're going to talk to, and you'll really feel like you are connected to that game, maybe in a little different way, where the NBA is, just because it's so much bigger, it's different. I could have asked that question more elegantly, but I think you know where I'm getting at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that definitely is part of it for me. I'll tell you the other part. I like the style of coaching in the WNBA. I mean, I'm an old school guy, and obviously I've been at it a long time. And I think if you're a fan watching, the X's and O's are more similar to what the NBA was 30 years ago, or what even college basketball is now, or even really closer to European style basketball in terms of how they play. They still run a great number of set plays. I love it. I mean, I was like, I sit and watch games in my preparation, take notes, and I'm also X and O, and I like some of the plays, like the play that Lynn Roberts ran last night.
Yeah, it was nice.
The last shot, and you know, it was really set up for Kelsey Plum on the weak side, but both defenders went with Kelsey Plum. Neka Gumuke is wide open, and Erica Wheeler fine. But I'm like, great play, and then I'm diagramming side out of bounds. I just really, from a coaching standpoint, and really attracted to it. I've told a lot of coaches, like, you can learn from every level of basketball, but I've told, like, high school coaches and college coaches, men and women, like, watch the WNBA. There's great coaching in that league, and it relates to what you're doing at the other levels, where the NBA doesn't really, in my opinion.
I love that. Good things happen when Erica Wheeler's around. She's been a good veteran guard who makes the right play. All right, I want to ask you a couple questions about your Prime Video experience, because you know you have experience both with Turner when they had the package, and obviously now with Prime Video. So let's start here. Have you found that there are certain things that are unique with Prime Video where they do basketball a specific way that was different than when you were at Turner, the way they did basketball?
That's a great question. I think the biggest difference is really will be noticed going forward, in that I really sense from all of the people there on the production side and the executives, they're constantly looking for ways that they can better present the game, better use their technology to present the game. And they're unafraid. They're unafraid of taking a chance and, okay, well, that didn't work, then we'll go this direction. So I think one of the exciting things about working for the NBA on Prime is that we're always going to be trying to move forward and do different things. Last year we were highlighting mismatches in the middle of a play to try to move viewers' eyes to things like that. I really like their approach for trying new things. I think it's exciting.
Having talked to a lot of people in your seat over the years, They say that Ian Eagle is one of the easiest people to work with and is very, very good about setting up analysts to succeed. I think Michael Grady has that same skill. Kevin Harlan certainly has that same skill. And so I wonder, not that you would have, not that whoever is the play-by-play people is going to determine whether you want to work for a place or not. But I have to think, Stan, that when you're going to a place and those are the kind of caliber play-by-play people, you already know that you're going to be in a position where the broadcast should be very good. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And look, I mean, Amina Hussein, who was in charge of basically hiring the on-air yep. talent, you know, right from the beginning, my first call with Amina was, I was still under contract with Turner and she wasn't calling me about a job. She wanted to talk about the people that I had worked with. And she obviously didn't need my help in determining who's good at what they do, but what kind of people were they? And her entire thing for the studio and for the broadcast, she wanted a team. And to have that, you have to have team players. And those are the kind of people she went after. And they're unbelievable. I mean, I taught those guys, you know, make the entire broadcast. And if you work with Ian Eagle, Kevin Harlan, Michael Grady, and you can't do a decent job, then you're in real trouble because those guys make it. I remember my brother back in the day saying, hey, look, he said, those guys are the pros. We just show up and BS about basketball.
He's right. So Amina, obviously, who I've known for a long time and reported on, and Jared Stacey are like the two sort of key point people when it comes to Prime Video's NBA coverage. How did Stan, how eventually did you land with Amazon? I mean, you had, my sense is you probably had a previous relationship with Amina because I know you had done some stuff with ESPN. But at a certain point, someone has to say, hey, Stan, we'd love you to be part of this new venture that we're doing. So how did that come about?
Well, I did have a previous relationship with Amina from doing substituting in on their studio show some on ESPN back when she had it, when it was Chauncey Billups and Paul Pierce.
Was that Sage Steele or Beadle?
Michelle Beadle, right.
Beadle. Yep.
And so Amina was one of the first people. She would sit me down and go over film with me and, you know, tell me what I could have done better and everything else. And so that was my relationship. And then, you know, through the interview process, I got on with Jared Stacey and Jay Marine. And what really got me excited, I mean, I was excited about working for Amina again, but those two guys are basketball guys. And right. so, you know, I mean, they're really into all sports, but they're basketball guys. And just their enthusiasm and everything else. And then, as you said earlier, Richard, then, you know, you're getting Ian Eagle and Kevin Harlan. I hadn't worked with Michael Grady to that point, but Ian Eagle and Kevin Harlan, and you're saying, oh my gosh, I mean, this is going to be big time stuff. And I didn't even talk to or look at anything else. Once they had decided they wanted me, I was very excited to come aboard.
Do you get, I mean, did the contract include free shipping on stuff, Stan? Are you able to get packages?
No, you know what? And they made sure when we had our first meeting last year, no free Prime membership. No, nope, none of that. We're still on our own like everybody else. And you know, Richard, it's been a problem because when the Amazon guys are driving around my neighborhood, you know, I try to give them the wave and the fist like, come on, we're colleagues. And they don't, I guess they don't understand.
Ask maybe Amina can send you a hat or a t-shirt or something like
we
that.
We do get some swag. Yeah.
Right.
We get some swag.
What was your experience or what has been your experience with Steve Nash and Dwayne Wade, two guys who have gotten a lot of really good publicity for their broadcast work? And generally speaking, are still relatively new in the broadcast space versus their obviously great accomplishments as players. And in Steve's case, also coaching.
Listen, the only problem with those two guys is they're going to move guys like me out of the business here fairly soon. They're so good. And as they get some more reps, you know, they both did in studio work and on games.
Yeah.
They're fabulous, smart guys. Obviously, I knew Dwayne from having coached him.
Yep.
These guys put in a ton of time in preparing. They know the game. They've got relationships with a lot of the players who look up to them. And I enjoyed it. I did two or three with Steve in three-man booths, and we did the NBA Cup with Dwayne, and I like it. You know, you got somebody to bounce things off of more. I think Ian is the guy we did them all. He really liked it, you know, because he could get me to shut up some, which is not easy to do, and get somebody else to talk. He could put his hand over my mouth and point at Dwayne, so...
All right, a couple more here before I let you go. One of the things that, you know, it's almost like sentiment a little bit, and like you're sort of reading things anecdotally. That said, I really do think people came away from Amazon's coverage this year, particularly the studio, like the NBA fans really liked it. And like I thought it was new and fresh and different. And I don't know if... some of that was like sort of comparisons to like ESPN in the past or something like that. But again, as a longtime basketball guy, Stan, I don't know. Were you surprised that people seem to take to Amazon's coverage as quickly as at least the basketball fans seem to?
No, I wasn't surprised because, again, Amina would put a lot of work into putting the team together. They do a lot of preparation. I mean, those guys come in 5-6 hours before the studio show. I've never seen anything like that. And they've all done their own preparation and then they get prepared. And I love the format. The thing I have a problem with is when I have the second game, I don't get to see a lot of, because we're doing things and I miss it because, you know, I love the segments where they take a part of the game, go out on that court and teach it and walk through it. And then if I've known they done, we reference it in our broadcast, which is something that Jay and Jared and Amina really emphasized at our preseason meetings last year, was that they wanted it to be one show, not there's the studio show and the game that we're all together. And then Taylor Rooks was fabulous. You know, I'd worked with Taylor at Turner, and she was as a sideline reporter, and she was really good. But to be her first year of doing that full time, did not miss a show. She's the only one on broadcast doesn't get any nights off. So I don't know what her contract looks like, but she didn't miss a show. And the way she brought it all together, and then the chemistry those guys developed, I think, from mutual respect, you know, Dirk, Blake, Udonis, and then Steve and Dwayne from time to time, and then even Candace and Swin Cash and, you know, different people in. It was remarkable. I think it is a great show. And I think I know this from other sports. When I can have somebody down and teach me some things that I wouldn't know on a level that I can understand, not talking down to me, but that I can understand it, it enhances my enjoyment of the game. I know that from football and baseball in particular. And so I was not surprised that our fans warmed up to the studio show the way they did, because I thought they did a great job of, you know, teaching, educating people.
I agree. All right. I got three more quick areas and then I will let you go. I wonder if, you know, once you're a coach like you at the highest levels of basketball and you're watching something, I wonder if you approach what is in front of you like, how would I change this? How could I stop this? I wanted to get your take on when the Knicks were making that incredible comeback in Game 4. How were you thinking about that, and how were you watching it as someone who obviously has been on the sideline when a team is making a big run against you?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, I always, always, always commiserate with the coach who's on the wrong end of that, because I know what it feels like to be trying everything you can think of and you're not able to slow it down. But the Knicks, it was remarkable. I mean, and they, you know, what's remarkable about that series, Richard, I thought, was that I don't think I've ever seen a series. You know, we always used to say, hey, every game's different. And it usually is. In that series, it was five games with basically the same script.
It's a great point.
San Antonio gets out early. Knicks come back. San Antonio makes another run early in the third quarter. And then the Knicks end the game, right? So by the time we got to that game four, you could feel it. And you're saying, it's going to be a bigger comeback, but this is the same script again.
The I know I'm asking like a Miami guy this, but do you buy like the sort of mythology that it is different if you win in New York, particularly in basketball? It's a city that obviously has such a rich and deep history with the pros. You know, it's an urban environment, so there's rims sort of everywhere. People congregate to that team when they're good. But I'm a New Yorker, like, so I don't want to like overblow the sort of the mythology of it. That said, I can't lie, Stan. You know, it felt like a different kind of championship than other championships. And then you see that parade, and you're like, my God, this is like the men landing on the moon kind of thing.
But listen, I as someone who had to coach against them all the time, I get tired of all the, you know, world's most famous arena and all of that. But the bottom line is, it is different winning in New York. There's no question. And basketball, in large part, is probably identified. I mean, look, it's played everywhere in the world now. But I don't think there's anywhere that is more, more connected to basketball than New York City is. As you said, I mean, it's a huge playground sport there. And as many, New York sports fans are great with the, you know, the Yankees and the Giants and the Rangers and all of that. But there's nothing like the Knicks to New York fans. And I think the other thing is, you got to remember, in New York, you know, for a long time, that was the only basketball team. You know, there's right. You know, now you have the Nets, but the Knicks are a different thing. You could feel it. Even when I was at games in the playoffs, watching on TV, you could feel it. It was just different in New York. And the only thing I've seen close to that is when the Red Sox broke their long string, the curse of the Bambino, and won. You could feel it even through the TV in the city of Boston. That's really the only thing I could compare it to, that what happened this year. I had guys that I coached in college 40 years ago who grew up in New York and were huge fans and went to the parade. I mean, one of them, the son of a guy that I had played for, living up in Vermont, he and his mom get in the car and go all the way down because his dad, who had passed away, was a huge Knicks fan. I mean, the meaning to the people was there. I don't think we'll see that again outside of New York. And if it happened again in New York, it still wouldn't even be the same after 53 years.
I agree. All right, last two. When Jeff was let go by ESPN, that was a story. I was at The Athletic then, and like, you know, could not have sort of written more about that. And everybody knows my position on that. So it was just a horrifically bad decision by ESPN. All that said, Stan, Jeff has not returned to broadcasting since then, which is pretty interesting to me. I think he's still with the Clippers. He's an assistant coach there, or has some kind of role there. If you would have asked me, I would have thought Jeff would have been back doing this, but he has taken a different path. I did want to ask you, obviously, I'm sure you speak all the time. Do you think Jeff will ever return to broadcasting, or is that chapter of his life done?
You know, the one thing I've learned as I get older is you never say never to anything. It's not on his radar now. I think he's focused on coaching. I've asked him about broadcasting things a couple of times, and no, it's not on his radar now, but he was great at it, as you know. And so you never say never, and you know, you never know. In another year or two, people's priorities change, and certainly I think he could have an opportunity pretty much with anybody if he wanted one. And so we'll see. But right now, really focused on coaching and the LA Clippers and trying to help make them better.
Okay. And then the last one is, you know, this could happen by the time this podcast is out, but there is so much talk today as we're taping this, Dan, June 22nd on Giannis, in terms of, like, you know, will, where he might get traded. And it seems the latest reporting, I think, from Shams at ESPN was that it's coming down to the Heat and the Celtics. I'd be interested just in your broad thoughts on that. Obviously, if Giannis gets traded, that's a seismic deal in the league. It's going to impact multiple teams. How do you see whatever, even though we don't know the result of that yet, just sort of the fact that a player of that magnitude looks like he's going to get moved?
Yeah, and that's basically how people go now. They don't go in free agency anymore. You know, I mean, nobody or very few teams have enough cap space. So it comes down to a player wanting to get traded. And then a team like Milwaukee, who's ready to take a different direction. And then you go out and see what you can get. I mean, I don't have any inside knowledge. I would be a little concerned if I were anybody. Giannis is a great player. He's won at the highest level, but his health over the last few years, really since their championship, has not been good. I'd be very concerned about that, particularly if I'm the Celtics, because, you know, that roster's good. And if they're, you know, I've been reading like stuff you have, I'm not sure I'm throwing Jaylen Brown into a deal. Not that, I'm not saying he's better than Giannis, but he's certainly been more available. You know, he and Tatum work together. I'm not so sure. Now, Miami's deal's a little bit different because they've been mediocre for a long time. Some of their runs through the play-ins have made it look better than it is. But, you know, they've been basically a 500 team for years now. So taking a chance probably makes more sense for them. And I think Pat Riley's always on the lookout for the big deal, the big name. They've held back from making smaller deals that may have helped them so that they could be in a position to make a deal like this. But it'll certainly change the course of the league, and particularly the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think people probably don't realize this, but Giannis turns 32 in December. You know, he's not the 27-year-old like anymore. So that's a really astute point. But you, Stan, your passport is all set. It's all up to date.
It's all up to date, ready to go. I knew I had to have it ready at the beginning of the season, and in case we got a Raptors game at any point. So I wanted to make sure it was up to date. And look, I was talking to you off the air before. I mean, send me to Toronto anytime you want. I love the city of Toronto. I think my two favorite North American cities are San Francisco and Toronto. So
I love that.
I'm looking forward to, I'm going to try to get to a CFL game while I'm up there. I'm going to get to a Blue Jays game while I'm up there. Probably get down to the theater district one night when I'm there. I love the city of Toronto.
Yeah, appreciate that. Don't worry, Stan. Americans are still welcome here. We know how to separate between the people and everything else. So come across the border and you're fine.
Absolutely right.
All right. Stan Van Gundy will be calling the Los Angeles Sparks Toronto Tempo game for Prime Video Thursday, starting at 7 p.m. As he mentioned on this podcast, his first ever WNBA call, which is pretty awesome. You get a chance to do something in broadcasting that you've never done before is always very cool. And then obviously you'll hear him when the NBA starts next year on Prime Video. And we mentioned the many different play-by-play people he's calling games with, between Ian Eagle, Kevin Harlan, Michael Grady, and their studio show has been rightfully praised. Like that I gotta, you know, as painful as it is to praise executives like Jared Stacey, I gotta get and Amina Hussein, I gotta give it up to those guys. They really have put together a really, really good crew. Stan, continued success. I'm always glad to see when people are writing about you and saying good things. And thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Absolutely. A lot of fun, Richard.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Stan Van Gundy. That was excellent. You know, I know Stan's done media all the time. I think he does Le Batard a lot. You know, there's a reason why he's an excellent guest. And I'm very excited for him. I think that'll be so cool. You know, again, like in broadcasting, when you've got as many reps as Stan Van Gundy, to get a chance to do something new is so cool because it does not happen always. So I have no doubt he'll really, really enjoy doing the Sparks and the Tempo. Head to the archives. We've done a lot of sports media roundtables, and particularly over the last couple of weeks with World Cup stuff. So check that out. The last podcast, I had John Lewis and Austin Karp on, and we talked about Fox and how they're doing with the World Cup, went into the viewership, and then talked a little bit about the NBA Finals viewership and the UFC White House event. Monica McNutt and Mike Breen were on this podcast last week as well, talking about the Knicks winning. I'm trying to think who any other name guests who've been on. You can go back, I think, to May with Ian Eagle was on this podcast, and Al Michaels was on this podcast in mid-May. So again, if you haven't heard those, feel free to check those out. Want to thank James Jackson for all his hard work. Much, much appreciated on that. If you like this podcast, feel free to leave us a review and a nice note. Always helpful when it comes to external publicity. Thanks to Odyssey. Always appreciate the support there. And most of all, thank you. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.